Always after a defeat and a respite, the shadow takes another shape and grows again. Welcome back to Bookwave, the book club podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined today by Pat.
Hey.
And William.
Hey.
Today we're looking at the first half of The Fellowship of the Ring in the series called The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien. And since we're all familiar with this story, my first question to you, the audience, and to you, Pat and Will, what is the biggest difference that you found in the first half of The Fellowship of the Ring and the movies that we all grew up with and know and love?
We're just jumping right into it, eh? I'm enjoying it. I think the biggest difference has to be Tom Bombadil. Right off the hop, but I guess that's not right off the hop, right? Like, it's the biggest thing for me in the first half of The Fellowship, but also the whole age relationship that the hobbits have. Like, the movie creates these characters that I think was very smart to do because they're more relatable, and it's like Elijah Wood is this young hobbit, but in the books he's like, what, 33? Yeah, at the start.
At the beginning of the journey that he takes, which is different from the start of the story, he's 50 years old. He leaves the Shire at the same age that Bilbo does.
Yeah, and it's like, so right away, that's a huge shift too.
Yeah, and it says, like in the movies, it portrays Frodo as Bilbo's nephew, where in the books, it kind of gets into, like, they're cousins, but they kind of, like, Bilbo adopts Frodo as his nephew to say, like, this is the one that I choose to inherit all of my treasure, because Bilbo didn't have any heirs of his own.
Yeah, and there's a whole chapter on Bilbo's lineage, and especially after Bilbo disappears to go to Rivendell. A lot of that has to do with going through his belongings and possessions, and many of the other hobbits are just trying to figure out what they want, and, you know, and even becoming suspicious about Frodo inheriting some of Bilbo's possessions and money and treasure and even his book too.
That's a good point. I've totally forgot. Yeah, like, he sells Bag End, so yeah. Like, at the end of the movies when they return to Bag End, I'm just sitting there like, but Frodo moved to Brandybuck.
There's a lot of things that, like, get kind of left out for the movies, but, like, it had to be left out. There just wasn't enough room in those movies, even the extended editions. Like, this book is so extensive and has so much detail that, like, every step these hobbits take have meaning, and you just can't portray that in the movies in the same medium. It just doesn't work that way.
No.
Yeah, and most of the time it's filler. In the book, even.
Yeah, like, you look at something like the Iliad, right? Like, those first, how many pages were just like, and this ship had these people, and these people were from this place, and this place had a mountain, and beside the mountain was a river. But in a movie, you do that with, like, one shot with a helicopter and a camera. Yeah. And you're not telling the story that way. But with a book, it's like, if you don't put content into a book, you have this blank universe. So for every random detail they put in, they're fleshing the world out. Whereas when you go to the Shire in the first movie, you see it. There it is. There's people. That guy's old. That guy's weird. He does something funny with his snot. Like, the whole universe is fleshed out visually, but literally, you can't. Oh, literally. That's how that word works.
I was waiting for you to say something like that.
You can't, unless you're going to make a picture book for children, you can't just do that.
Right.
Yeah. And, like, it reminded me of two things when we're talking about, like, going through, like, the description of the Shire and, like, the lineages of people. It reminded me of, like, in a lot of ways, the Bible and the Iliad and the Odyssey, where it needed to tell you all of the background of these characters and a little bit of the history. But at the other side of that coin, it's like To Kill a Mockingbird, where it's like, this is the neighbor down the street. This is like the crabby neighbor. That's the really nice neighbor. It's just building up this whole little neighborhood and the society and their culture and how they all interact with each other. And when they go over to Brandybuck, it's like, it's all different. Like the whole neighborhood, everybody's perceptions of each other is shifted a little bit. Then when they get to Bree, it's a whole different culture again because they're not in the Shire anymore, but there's still hobbits and humans living together. It's awesome.
Well, it's like depending on how far you want this story to go, like when you look at To Kill a Mockingbird, it's like you're telling one short story and you don't need that many characters, but nonetheless you need a world. And
Right.
with this world, it's like you're moving here. Like you're setting up shop in Middle Earth, and this is going to actually take a part of your heart for the rest of your life. So here, let me tell you about 10,000 different things about the Hobbits.
Yeah, and before the book even starts, there's a whole little like prelude just called Concerning the Hobbits. Like before we get into the story, you're gonna have to know a thing or two about these little guys. It helps if you've, read the book The Hobbit too, because, we're dealing with the same people here. You have to know like how they would react to such a thing. Like they're all prudes and they all kind of keep to themselves and all of this and all of that. So like someone just disappearing and or talking about the elves all the time and coming back from an adventure with the dwarves with a donkey full of gold and jewels. Like it's not gonna a society of hobbits aren't going to perceive that the same way as a culture full of humans or anybody living in today's society.
And I think like Tolkien anecdotally has characters say and says in the Concerning Hobbits bits, like you could learn everything there is to know about hobbits in a year and still in a lifetime they'll surprise you or something like that. But it's like he says you could, but then what inevitably has happened is we shall. And here we are, and we're gonna take the year and learn everything there is to know about hobbits and then be surprised by them on this journey. And that's cool.
Yeah, and like even the random characters that like when Tolkien presents the hobbits like this, you don't expect those kind of things from the random hobbits like Fatty Bulger and the guy on the mushroom farm. Like every time another hobbit, like every time push comes to shove, they always do what needs to be done. It's like, oh, this is beautiful. Like they're just like the perfect analogy, like for life in general. Like you're set in your ways, but at the end of the day, when you really have to get down to business, you know what you have to do, and like you gotta protect Frodo. And it's like I don't know what you're running from, but I can see you're running, so I'm gonna help you. We're all hobbits. We all stick together. We're all this tiny little family. So, even if we're all strangers, we're still all this weird family because we all really care about how we're related. And
Well, they're all.
I had one little note in my book that said like, oh, so when we were talking to Paul about all of the genealogies in the Bible and how like the four of us were like, no, we would rather just skip all of this because it doesn't resonate with us at all. The hobbits, they're the culture that love that part of the Bible. They skip ahead to that part and say like, yes, the genealogies. I know who I'm related to, my families and their families, and everything fits together in this neat little puzzle called the Shire now because I have this little map. Yeah.
It's like the epitome of order and ignorance. But ignorance that's been well informed with the things it's interested in. And, it's very utopic and flawed, the Shire and the Hobbit people, and they're very shielded from the world. And it's interesting because when chaos does finally come into the Shire, the only response the Shire musters is to just leave. Like it cannot abide it. It must go. And for the whole story, the Shire is fine. And it's like this, it's weird because it's not the world, and the world is filled with chaos and battles, but these people have just tapped out and they've gone to their cave and they've painted the walls and they've installed lights and they've got a mini fridge and a farm.
Yeah, it's like a couple weeks ago you brought up Attack on Titan, and it's just like the first episode of Attack on Titan. They're all happy inside the walls in this isolationist community. But as soon as one of the walls come down, as soon as those two worlds start to mix, all the chaos ensues and nobody knows where to go from there, because like they're just ignorant, and ignorance equals bliss. But at the same time, it also opens up the pathway to complete chaos if that is ever breached. Like, you put up your walls of ignorance to protect yourself from the outside world, and then all it takes is one little incident for your whole world to come crashing down. And then there's titans eating your family members and your neighbors and everything. Like, that's the kind of world you get thrown into. Like, you realize the ring is pure evil. You get the ring wraiths coming after you. Everyone you know and love is in danger. So you gotta do what needs to be done. Your ignorance isn't going to benefit you at all in that situation.
And you also have to realize that time is going by really fast. And you have to take as much time as you can to collect yourself and understand that things won't remain the same. So that's why for the most part, Bilbo gives the ring to Frodo, passes it on to him, and he decides to go off to Rivendell. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, though, because Bilbo's probably one of the only hobbits that we hear about who gets to a place in his life where he's dissatisfied with the Shire and leaves. And maybe that's because of the Baggins or the Took that's in him, or the wizard that's affected him his whole life. But it's the two of them.
I think it's because he's the only one that got that ignorance forcefully taken away from them. Like, they lived in this world where all they knew was the Shire and, you know, their pipeweed, their 9 meals a day. And then Gandalf comes into their life and says, oh, by the way, did you know about all this chaos? And, like, that to a point gets addictive, because then you know that the world that I knew wasn't exactly all there was to it, so you hunger for that knowledge of the outside world and you want to experience it for yourself. Like, if someone tells you, hey, there's a great adventure on the other side of the Shire for you, and you just say, oh, no, not for me. No, thank you. And you live the rest of your life, you're going to be thinking about that moment for the rest of your life. It's going to weigh on you. That ignorance, like, exposed, is going to affect you for the rest of your life, if you go on that adventure or not.
And to go on to what I've said earlier about time, Frodo has this sense of urgency when Gandalf talks about Sauron and the One Ring and how very powerful it is, to the point where not only does he feel nerve-wracked to even carry the ring and just attempts to give it to Gandalf instead, but he refuses. But he realizes that he now has to invest his entire time to traveling across Middle Earth to take it there. So there's a sense of urgency within Frodo, and he's more of a conscientious type of hobbit too, unlike Merry or Pippin or anything. And Sam, in a way, he's also a bit conscientious, but a bit naive the first time, at least from what I've gathered from it.
Well, that's what I've been trying to get to, is like Bilbo and Frodo, like when Bilbo went on his journey, he did it because, well, he said no at first, but then he did it to help these dwarves with their homeland. And then in the end, you know, he got over his illusions of the Shire and he went on with the elves. And Frodo has this ring and he goes and he gets rid of the ring because it has to be done. But I don't think he did it to to get back to the Shire. Whereas you look at Sam, Merry, and Pippin, and it's like, I think they did it so that they could get back to the Shire. Like, they're like, okay, Frodo, like, we're going to help you because you need to do this. And then when we're done, we're going to go home and we're going to have a beer. But that plan. And I don't think Bilbo really did either. Like, they miss the Shire and they yearn for it the whole journey, but they lose the part of themselves that can live in the Shire on their quest, and they're completely changed. But you look at Sam and Merry and Pippin, and you don't have that impact.
Yeah, with Pippin specifically, like, it goes through the detail of, like, his family history, and he's a Took himself, so you kind of expect to see that sense of adventure in him. And then, like, he's one of the few hobbits who goes out and journeys into the woods outside the Shire, but never any further than that. So it really takes the outside source to, you know, get the hobbits off their asses and, you know, get going. Because it's not that adventurous element of the Took. Like, that's not enough to just be a Baggins or a Took. And then it has to be inflicted upon you, I think. And Frodo just happened to be the one that they all chose, because he was just quirky enough, I suppose.
I don't know. It's just, it's something to think about, and I don't really even know what my resolution is on it, but it's interesting that it happened that way to Frodo and to Bilbo.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll get better insight as I read this book. I think his journey is going to have a bit more introspection.
Yeah, and in case anybody hasn't read the book, the first half ends, like, right before Rivendell, basically. Right before they reach Rivendell and meet all of the elves, form the Fellowship. We haven't actually made it there yet. So I guess that's a spoiler. Another thing it talks about in, like, the lore of the hobbits is that they all kind of follow what they call the rules. Because, like, the old kingdom of men had a king, and they made these laws, and the Shire followed these laws, and then when that kingdom fell, the Shire just kind of kept those laws without the king or the kingdom. And they kind of put up these rules as their religion or as their political system or as their god, almost. It's like the only thing they hear to is, like, the common sense, almost, that you see in the rules. And the, like, most of them seem to be pretty arbitrary, like eating at a time of day. But, like, we talked about this in the Iliad, where, you know, what could be better than eating when it is the hour for eating, right? So, like, these little arbitrary laws that they follow do have value. And it's interesting to see, like, their point of view, where, like, they're the only ones that still care about these laws of the old kingdom. But that doesn't matter to them. Objectively, the laws and the rules don't mean anything. But they still all adhere to them, and they all find this respect for each other with a set of rules that they follow.
Well, it's structure.
Yeah.
Something comforting about doing things the way they've always been done.
I think that's just, like, it gives us an insight to how the Shire operates. Like, I don't really know if there's a parallel for, well, there definitely is a parallel for us, because, you know, we have a society based on laws, but we also don't really care about the majority of these laws. And we've come up with the old adage, rules were made to be broken. And, you know, the structure of society falling apart and everything.
Oh, come now. Don't be nihilistic. Well, on average, your average person doesn't rob or murder.
No, but it doesn't need to. It doesn't need to be the average person. It just needs to be, like, people making the most noise. Like,
well, I think in today's society, especially on the internet, it's easy to get niched into a part of the internet that makes you feel like the whole world is screaming at you the same message, but you can do that for any message. And like we constantly talk about, and especially at the height of a pandemic, man, you're gonna get lost in your own house. Like, when was the last time you had a meal in a restaurant surrounded by strangers? Like, we are so abstracted now from community, and that's something that we don't have a parallel with the Shire anymore. Like, we can't throw a birthday party and have
That's what I mean,
144
dude.
guests.
Like, that's what I'm talking about with our society breaking apart. We try to set up rules for everyone to follow, like even just social distancing. You're gonna find half the people are gonna say, "No, I'm not gonna social distance. I'm not gonna wear a mask. I'm not gonna like shut down my business. I don't care about any of these rules." Because we don't have a respect for the rules. I'm not saying that these are, I'm not arguing for like the justification of any of these rules. I'm just saying we don't care about them anymore. Like, love thy neighbor doesn't mean anything to anybody these
Well,
days.
no, I'm not saying that you're arguing for the justification of that. I'm arguing against what you're saying. I think love thy neighbor still means something to a lot of people these days. But I think that the people on the internet and the people that are talking the loudest are a minority that make the representations, and the media and the news are just as much to blame. But I think everywhere we're looking right now, we're looking at a fake reality that just the minute you walk out your front door, you could knock on 10 people's doors right now in the peak of a pandemic with a broken down car, and one in 10, I guarantee you, will help you out. Like, we are in Canada and we are a good people, and we are still like that, and we're not few and far between. But I think that the internet and the isolation of our society for the past 30 years that has gotten worse and worse makes it seem that way. And that's all it has to be.
Well, to go back to the rules of the Shire and everything, and it's to help balance harmony and structure for that. And it's only when it changes when the hobbits decide to go to Rivendell and carry the ring. And it's this newfound reality that they face, and in a way it just changes them, even if they have to, spend a few campfires, smoking pipe weed and, talking about great food and have, sharing their weirdest dreams and everything. It's a like a it's a how do you say this? It's coming of age and coming to the part of the reality that they ultimately have to face when it's something that they haven't faced before. And they can remain in that structural harmonious area all they want to, but then again, with age comes with change. So they have to make sense of it and learn to live with it.
Yeah, I think the point that I'm really trying to make is that, Will, you said that it all it really takes is for it to look like society's falling apart, and that means that society's falling apart. I think the isolation and this, like, this forced isolation and this social media driving a spike between everybody is literally tearing our society apart. Like, literally, literarily. It's
Yeah.
breaking down the edges of the story so nobody actually cares. Like, we're headed towards some kind of, like, the machine stops type story where everyone's stuck in a box and the only way that we can communicate with each other is how we're communicating right now over this one screen, and everyone's terrified to walk outside their door and visit their own son.
So the other half of my sentence I didn't get to, though, was all that you need is for it to seem like society is falling apart to get people to make decisions that are irrational and based in emotion. And I think that when we see that is a big problem. But if we do statistics, which are harsh, we find that the percentages are actually quite inspiring, right? Like, there's a lot of crap that has happened in the past year. And because we've been stuck in our box and subjected to it, it seems terrible. But we don't get the 99% of events in the world that have a great impact. And we don't get the story about the person helping the old person, or the person helping the disenfranchised person, or the person helping the person that requires help. Because that's not good news. And I think that the people are aware of everything that we're aware of, right? Like, we're no specialer than anyone else. I think we're all pretty insightful individuals. And I think we're all pretty freaked out about the fact that maybe, you know, we are like a couple emotional outbursts away from stupid destructiveness. But I think that is how society has always been. And I think that, you know, we don't have the perspective to remember that sort of thing. There's like five different streams of thought that we could all agree with. And if you put them all together, it forms this river of like peace and serenity. But it's like, the situation's not that much different than it was 2,000 years ago, is it?
The problem there is... nobody living today has the perspective of 2,000 years ago. So they have the perspective of 10 years ago, and they say, my life sucks compared to then. I'm going to start a mob. And then that mob starts a riot, and then that riot tears down the parliament buildings. Yes, Will, you have a question.
Have you seen the Mongolians? I've seen some photos of the Mongolians living in their huts from thousands of years ago with their Wi-Fi and their laptops and their dirt bikes in like full war garb, and just like they just kept their culture and added Wi-Fi and dirt bikes.
Yeah, but we're talking about North American culture right now.
Okay, but I'm talking about the whole world, and I'm saying even know about that.
The whole right? world like, is irrelevant when we're talking about North America heading towards a societal collapse.
No, it is important when we're talking about that, because societal collapses are being headed towards all over the world. And what happens when societies collapse is new societies are born out of them, and they tend to scale up, right? So you got to keep the world in mind. But my point about the Mongolians is probably they're not all living in huts with dirt bikes and Wi-Fi, but I didn't even know that, you know, some of them still carry on their cultural practices thousands of years later, whereas the white man doesn't as much. But that's one part of the world I had no idea about. Now imagine how many parts of your town you don't have any idea about. How about your province? How about your country? It's so easy to think that the rest of the town or province or country is the way everything is, and that everybody's just as terrible as everything. And we put blinders on to how it's just a bunch of individuals doing the best they can. And as long as we don't lean into fear, I don't know, man. I got high hopes.
So
yeah, there's been some crazy shit, but that the power of good, even in a small dose, can outweigh such great evil. We see that in this story. We see that in the Bible. Go ahead, Pat.
Including song, I was going to add. Because there's a ton of songs in this book.
Yeah.
So. But I was going to ask, since we've talked about hobbits, and I don't know if we've, I don't know if we can get to this though, since it's completely different. But how does this relate to the other races in Fellowship of the Ring, like the elves, the dwarves, and men?
They're all pretty pretentious, aren't they?
Well, I mean, yeah, they have their own viewpoints and everything, but, and I'm probably the only one who has completely gone through the entire book, especially during the snowpocalypse here in Texas. They end up helping each other too, especially when they reach, like right after they get out of the mines of Moria.
That's
spoilers. They get out. They go in. Moria.
Moria.
is Balin okay? is he all right?
Remind me who that is.
Balin's Wallen, Philly and Killy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Balin's the one that's in Moria, isn't he? But dead.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
So, yeah.
Moment of silence.
So, yeah, getting back on track, you could say, like, the different races make a good kind of comparison to the way, like, different cultures interact today. Like, even after, like, especially after something like World War II, who we know, like, J.R.R. Tolkien definitely had some experiences in. And, like, just the way that people perceive the Germans, or the way people perceive the Japanese, or the Russians, or even Europeans and Americans, or Italians, whatever. Like, we're all...
Every culture.
They're all going to have a little bit, like, just off, you know? Like, weird and strange. Not in, like, the putting down way, but, like, it's a stranger. Like, I don't understand it because that's a stranger to me. In that way, it's kind of strange. So we would obviously have some kind of, like, pretentious approach to a society of hobbits living in holes in the ground. Be like, what, really? You live in holes in the ground and just stick a door on the edge? That's kind of weird. Whereas a hobbit would say, oh, you've built these giant things made out of wood? You chop down trees just for shelter? That's kind of bizarre, isn't it? So, like, you could see how, like, the perception of just pretentious people thinking their culture is the best, it's all they've ever known, so how could you react any differently other than, that's strange and weird to me? You're funny little creatures to me, or those big people, they're very strange. I don't understand their culture at all. So there's always going to be that disconnect. Like, I don't really know what was going through the mind of a World War II German soldier, or Italian soldier, or Japanese soldier, so, or even an English soldier. An English or American, exactly. Like, it doesn't, like, you can't understand those kinds of things without actually experiencing it yourself. You can have empathy, but that only gets you so far.
Yeah. Also, the elves that Frodo meets in the woods were very nice, weren't they?
Yeah.
I have no good transition here.
Yeah, and it's just like, with that barrier, with that barrier of ignorance, there's always a way to connect to someone else within that culture. It's all,
well,
it's
he
a
spoke
lot easier.
Their language.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it's a lot easier for Frodo and Bilbo because they spoke Elven and they were considered elf friend already. Like, they have this special title for people that aren't elves, but they trust. So that on its own gives you a little glimpse into, like, how much they're able to trust people outside their own culture.
Well, it's like the stories of Christmas Day in the midst of World War II, where both sides just stop fighting and celebrate Christmas. And it's like, wouldn't it be nice if we could be humanly human all of the time in every capacity?
Yeah.
Yep.
Get to a table, have a calm discussion about the perpetuation of the human race and the colonization of the universe.
Yeah, but, like, the thing that brought them together was Christmas. Like, that has its basis in the common European religion. Like, Christianity gave us Christmas, which gave us both sides of World War II in that situation. So, or was that World War I, the Christmas truce?
Ooh, it was one of the two.
It was one of the big ones. But, like, it was Christmas was the symbol that brought them together. And then.
Like, wouldn't it be cool to have a symbol that would bring us all together? All of us?
Yeah. Maybe it's Christmas, but we have Satanists who think that Christianity is the source of all the divisiveness in the world. So what do you do about that?
Well, it
Sort of
can't
an
be a, it has to transcend.
a random, somewhat related topic. It reminds me of that one bit where in one of George Carlin's books that he wrote when he was alive, he
What about the ones he
mentioned,
wrote when he was dead?
well, one of the rules that he advocated for was to spend 24 hours dancing. Every human in the world would just get together, forget about their ideologies, forget about their conflicts and fighting with each other, and just dance for 24 hours.
Yeah.
See, and dancing and singing and art, those are some of the things that could have brought us all together. But for some reason, over here in the West, we've turned it into this thing that you have to be good at, and that you could be bad at dancing, and that you could be bad at art, and that
It doesn't matter how good you are.
it stifles it, and it's supposed to be expression. And it's like we have a society of people that are expressing things that are so intentional and poignant and pretentious that they're stupid and pointless. And then a vast majority of people who aren't expressing themselves at all in any capacity beyond drinking or gaming.
Yeah, and then
Or
there's the
both.
people that who are actually afraid to express themselves and they just throw paint at a wall and they call that their art. Yeah,
Hey
I
now.
went there. Like, that's all that is
Well,
a
both of them.
fear. Yeah.
It's all fear. The person who doesn't express themselves at all, and the person who poorly expresses. But I mean, expression is good. Do whatever you are gonna do. Express yourself. Fuck. If it's gonna be fake, then let's start with that. Why is it fake? Who hurt you?
Jeez.
But that's the thing.
Don't run
That's
away.
how we
We didn't
heal.
mean it. We didn't mean it. We're sorry. Oh.
So what else do we what other things do we want to bring up in this book?
I
I
don't know, it's
think
pretty awesome. I highly recommend it. If you're still listening and you are on the fence about reading Lord of the Rings, I think we could all agree you should read it.
yeah. And watch the movies. Like this is more influential to most people than, a lot of religions these days. So, like, I m myself personally, I get more salience from Star Wars than from the Bible. So, I could definitely understand if the Lord of the Rings is more meaningful than the Bible. I think we hit on a big theme that Tolkien wanted to express was like fear, just straight up. And how if you let fear rule your life, then you're just not going to get anywhere with that kind of mindset.
And I think that might be the problem with Frodo. I think he did let fear run his life, at least in the movies. He destroyed the ring and he had an away from the whole time, but he never had a love thing where it was like, I'm going to destroy the ring because I love the Shire and I want to drink a beer when I get back. Whereas Sam, the whole time, was like, I love Frodo and I'm going to help him destroy the ring so that we can go back and have a beer.
I was just gonna say, like, that is why Samwise is my favorite character in Lord of the Rings. 'Cause like he never let his friends down. Like he felt like he was on the path more than Frodo ever was. Even though Frodo was kind of like effectively given a handicap, it was still always Samwise that got them forward. And
But it was because of his ignorance and his bliss that he was able to do that. If he had have had the burden of the ring, he would have turned into a completely different person. We would have seen a much uglier version of Sam, a version of Sam that killed Gollum and took the ring for himself and the woman, the bar wench, and just created a new Hobbit kingdom and took over the world.
oh my God, dude,
I want to
imagine.
read that fan fiction.
Imagine the darkest timeline. Samwise usurps Sauron and becomes the new Dark Lord.
They're on the cliff, and Sam's like, I could take it just for a minute. And Frodo, instead of trusting Gollum, is like, yeah, Sam, you've always got my back. You know what? Here, hold the ring for a minute. And then Sam just pushes him off the hill.
My precious. Roll credits.
There's a little horse whistle. One of the ring wraiths flies in. He hops on, throws on the helmet.
Oh, jeez.
Kills Aragorn.
No!
So throws Gimli at Legolas, killing them both.
Oh, jeez.
I'm going to write a story, guys.
Okay. There was...
And then we'll interview you about it. You know, we'll have it as a...
Oh, the darkest timelines. Too.
Yes, we'll have a podcast entitled The Darkest Timeline. There is.
We'll just do every book. We'll just twist them all.
There was one little... like tiny thing in this book that I thought was pretty neat, and it was the Hobbit's ritual around the birthdays. And instead of everyone giving presents to the birthday boy spent a little bit of money and gave everyone that he invited a little birthday present. And I was just like, that is literally perfect. That is a better ritual than what we have. We're teaching people to wait a year and they get presents. Instead, we could be saying, like, you know, every year you help your community by giving the little children a little present, giving the kids a toy, giving your neighbors a hand tool or something.
Or giving up something.
It turns into, like, everybody's getting something and giving something all of the time. And it's just, like, you have this bond and this relationship and start getting gifts for people that make sense.
Yeah. Or just even giving up something that you have that you've always wanted to give up. Like, if it's, like, you know, giving up alcohol or something like that, or red meat, or, like, some people... I've known several artists who have... celebrated their birthday by giving up something that they've had for a long time, just getting rid of it. And it would, whether it be their something in their diet, or if they were, you know,
giving up, like, everything you've grown out of, right? Like, okay, this year I've grown out of, like, not just pants but behaviors and belief systems. And
yeah, it's like when you're growing up and your parents sit you down and say, hey, you're getting a little old for some of your kitty toys. You want to donate them or give them away? Yeah. What are your ideas for those? It's like...
Oh, you poor thing, that happened to you. They're in my closet.
Like, I still have a good chunk of the
All
stuff.
Of them.
I gave some of them to my nephew more recently. So.
Yeah, but, like, even just, like, clothes that don't fit you anymore, something like that. Like, hey, you can't keep this forever. Like, what are you going to do with that? You're going to give it away? You're going to donate? You have, like, nephews, little siblings, stuff like that. Like, what's going to happen to that? And, like, it helps you to help other people. And when you get into the ritual of every day or every year on your birthday, you're giving something to somebody, then on any given day, if you're a hobbit that's well integrated with your community, you're going to be getting presents all the time. Like, if there's a birthday on every day and you know everybody in the Shire, then you're getting a present every day. Like, how could that not be a good thing, right?
Yeah. Literally.
And, like, it was never anything, like, expensive. It's just, like... You know, they make a big deal of a present of a basket of mushrooms. Like, that is a huge gift for a hobbit. Like, a basket of mushrooms or a tiny little trinket. Like, that'll make someone's day.
Anyone who hungers for mushrooms, it would be a great gift, right? Like, and that's the whole thing. You give someone a gift, and over time, you get to know what they want, and people get to know what you want. And there's tons of rituals I think we could take from the hobbits. You know, when they're not busy, they're sleeping and they're eating and they're drinking tea and beer and desserts and continuing to eat and drink and sleep. But when they need to save the world, they send one to do it.
Yeah. And I think that like the idea of like the 9 mealtimes a day or whatever, it also helps for just communication and togetherness, 'cause like if it's tea time, you're not just, by yourself sipping a cup of tea. Most of the time you're getting together with your neighbors and you're celebrating something. It's worth getting together to just have a conversation. If it's nothing but a conversation, at least it's a conversation. And that's just a ritual that we don't have nearly enough today.
Yeah.
Like I still consider myself lucky that I have a podcast and I'm able to sit down for, an hour and a bit to just talk about anything random. We started this talk about the Hobbits and the Lord of the Rings. Then we started talking about my existential crisis. And then.
And then culture and ritual and behaviors and beliefs, and they're all interrelated.
Yeah, and at the
And
back of
it
my head, I'm just constantly thinking, like, how do I fit in this crazy world? And how do we save the world? Like, how does it all integrate? Where do we go from here? How can I help other people? Because I know, like, every time I go on social media and I see someone complaining about some political issue, I'm like, this guy is suffering. Like, it's not like a who hurt you type of thing. It's like you are going through enough pain that you're just going through social media to get your connection. Like, that's the only way that you can feel connected to other people is by insulting their ideology. Then that's
Well,
we're
let's have
in.
a cup of tea and discuss it.
Yeah,
What kind of
that's
tea do
never
you
gonna
like?
happen.
There's a lot to respond to there, Scott, and I don't know where to start. But I think the biggest help you can do to people that are posting poorly on social media is to delete social media.
Then I
That
lose
crap
all of
is
my
garbage.
friends.
No,
Like,
you don't. No, you don't.
I can't leave home. I'm stuck
They're
here.
Gone. They're not there. You're not talking to them. And if you are talking to them, you're not going to lose them.
That doesn't help us create a connection to these people that I genuinely want to help. 'Cause like, I do know them. Like, we all went to high school together, and now they're all insane. And, like, there's no way to reach out without them saying, the world's
Well, you.
going to hell. It's all going to
And
end.
I don't think it's about reaching out. I think it's about making a committed effort to understanding where your soapbox is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you need to know what you get so much simpler than anybody else that you're able to communicate it when you're half asleep and stoned and have it be understood. And that's the thing you talk about. Because you don't have all the answers, and we don't have all the answers, and we're an interdependent species that are in the middle of an isolation crisis, and we're not sharing good knowledge or right knowledge, and we all need to.
I'm
You know,
not
this might
claiming to
be.
be, I'm not claiming to be some person that has the only tool to help these people
No,
at all.
every. No, no, but you're going to be one person who, based on your experiences, is easily relatable to for a whole set of people that have gone through similar experiences. And if your tool is, for example, art, comic, story, and adventure and fantasy are fantastic things to expose yourself to because there's something that inspires you and creates these imaginary hallucination dreamscapes that you can do on your own and know that. Not all of the world is just the 15 songs you've been listening to for 20 years and the three opinions you have in politics.
You know
Right?
what?
Read The Sandman. That could be your thing. Expose yourself to comics so that it changes you. Sorry, Pat, last time I cut you off.
I don't mean to
Okay,
diffuse
one
the
more time.
excitement here or anything like that, but I think this might be good for a Wavecast,
Yeah.
for a Wavecast discussion.
Whole point that I'm making. And the whole point we've been making the whole time for the 2 years we've been doing this podcast is that when you expose yourself to books and you share that experience with a couple guys that are willing to do that as well, you can start a conversation that you have no idea where it goes, and it can inspire you, and it can make you see things in a new light. And that's why The Lord of the Rings changed my life. And that's why reading these books changes my life. And that's why reading these books will change your lives, because it's a conscientious effort and ritual to expose your brain to new content. You want to try something new every day? Read a different book. Boom. Whole world experience. New thing done. Now you have more experience. Now you're a bit wiser. And that's why.
A lot of what you're saying, like, I'm kind of putting on a character of the devil's advocate, but at the same time, it's not a character, because it's like...
The shadow. The fear.
It's literally the darkest side of me that I am portraying right now. I'm not saying that I'm putting on like a mask or a character, but I'm just letting the darkness seep out for the sake of this conversation. And I don't think I would have gotten any of your replies or any of this information out without the way that I've acted. So
I'm glad I triggered you a little bit. you gotta be able to channel that, because everybody's got dark thoughts, and the problem about dark thoughts is when they stay in the dark and they fester and they breed and they grow and they consume, and it's like it gets to the point where you have one positive thought and it's like you take this tiny little, you know, those mini marshmallows, one of those you put it in a hot chocolate. You put a rainbow mini marshmallow in a cup of hot chocolate. The brain is the cup of hot chocolate. It consumes the good thought, and it's all just more darkness, because you're not talking about the darkness. And that's what Jordan Peterson talks about. That's what Gandalf talks about. That's what everybody's talking about. It's hard as heck out here. And I'm grateful to be able to experience these hardships with you guys and to talk about things and read things that aren't so hard. And hopefully grow and come up with a way to help others do the same thing. But it starts with reading the books. Yeah.
So there's one other question that I wanted to ask that we completely walked a circle around. And that is the question, who is Tom Bombadil?
He is just a bit of a mystery, isn't he?
As Goldberry would say, he is. Which is pretty close to the same reply as, you know, the God of the Bible. I am that I am. I will be what I will be. He is.
Yeah. He was such an interesting character. If you don't even like The Lord of the Rings, it's worth reading just for Tom Bombadil.
Yeah.
There's even a book, a standalone book about Tom Bombadil.
The Adventures of.
Yeah.
Yep. His coat was blue and his boots were yellow. He was always jolly, always singing. And there's about a million fan theories about who he actually is. Like, some people claim that he is like one of the Maiar, or however you say that. Some people think that he is the music at the beginning of creation. I don't know how that works, but it's interesting going down that rabbit hole.
and it's no wonder why the filmmakers of Lord of the Rings had a very difficult time how to put that into the films, but they decided not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't, like, is he referenced even in the extended edition?
I don't even remember.
Yeah,
I don't think they even mentioned his name.
Like, I watched it last week and I don't remember.
Yeah, like, it's just one of those things where, like, when you're talking or reading about Lord of the Rings, Tom Bombadil always comes up in some form or another, but I've never actually gotten an actual look at who the character is until, you know, the first Lord of the Rings book. And he's kind of like this, like, he's portrayed as the master of the woods, but then when they ask him, oh, so he owns all of this land? And they reply, oh, heavens, no. That would be quite a burden. They all belong to themselves. Tom is the master.
and it sort of reminds me of other similar characters, like in Half-Life 2, the video game Half-Life 2, where you run into that priest in Ravenholm. And I don't know about you, but he was very interesting, even though he only had a few minutes of dialogue. I couldn't help but wonder who he actually was.
Yeah. It's funny, You create this whole story, and then you're like, oh, and there's a god. And it's like in RuneScape, I remember for the longest time, there was one quest that gave you the ancient magics, and they kind of very lightly hinted with maybe 17 characters of text throughout the whole game for 10 years at this god named Zaros or Zeros. And I was so pumped for his existence, and it took me like another 6 years. And then finally they were like, yeah, he exists. Here he is. This is what he looks like. These are his followers. These are his people. I'm like, sick. I love those guys. And it's like, I just wanted backstory. And
sorry. Just,
it's amazing.
Or even in Destiny, the ruler of the tower.
You and your video games that are good that I haven't played.
I never played Destiny.
Kind of like the wizard in Stardew Valley.
Never played that.
It's kind of like Herobrine in Minecraft.
Yeah.
So anyways, until next time, may the force be with mass times acceleration. Evil.
Now that's just not how it works, Will. Oh, yeah. So I guess we can wrap this up. So you better check us out at our website, www.bookwave.club. We got a blog. We're on YouTube. We're on all the different podcasting websites, from Spotify to Google Play to Stitcher. And, yeah, I think that's about it. May the force be with you.
Or equal to mass times acceleration.
Poof, poof.